Now, tonight on Coast to Coast, you're going to hear an alternative view. Now, here's the official story. Early in the morning on September 11, 2001, 19 hijackers took control of four commercial airliners en route to San Francisco and Los Angeles from Boston, Newark, and Washington, D.C. At 8:46 a.m., American Airlines Flight 11 was crashed into the World Trade Center's North Tower, followed by United Airlines Flight 175, which hit the South Tower at 9:03. Another group of hijackers flew American Airlines Flight 77 into the Pentagon at 9:37 a.m. A fourth flight, United Airlines Flight 93, whose ultimate target was thought to be either the United States Capitol or the White House, crashed near Shanksville, Pennsylvania at 10:03 a.m.
Frank Lele, United 93, is at your 350, intermittent light stop. United 93, checking in, 350.
United 93, 350, roger. United 93, that traffic to you is 1 o'clock, 12 miles eastbound, 370.
Negative contact, we're looking, United 93.
Somebody call Cleveland. United 93, verify 350. United 93, verify your flight level 350. United 93, verify your level of 350. United 93, Cleveland. United 93, Cleveland. United 93, is your Cleveland Center address, please? United 1523, did you hear your company, some interference on the frequency here a couple of minutes ago, screaming?
Yes, I did, 797, and we couldn't tell what it was either.
Okay. United 93, Cleveland, if you hear the center identity.
And American 1060, a ditto on the other transmission.
American 1060, you heard that also?
Yes, sir, twice.
Roger, we heard that also, thanks. I just wanted to confirm it wasn't some interference.
Is that 10956?
Director 956, go.
I was just answering your call. We did hear that yelling, too.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we're just trying to figure out what's going on.
Hey, I got one here. I got the piece of dog. Keep remaining to me. We have a ball aboard. So it says.
Calling Cleveland Center, you're unreadable. Say again slowly.
Did you hear the transmission? Was that your plane that said he had a bomb aboard?
Say again. Was that United 93?
Yeah, that transmission, he said, was unreasonable. It sounded like someone said they have a bomb on board.
That's what we thought. We just we didn't get it clear. Is that United 93 calling? Executive 956, that aircraft we believe was transmitting is 12 o'clock, 5 miles. Turn left, heading 225. I'll get you away from him. Okay, he's climbing, so I want to keep everybody away from him.
Okay, I think we got him in sight.
Delta 1989, that traffic for you is at 11 o'clock and 15 miles southbound. 41 climbing. Looks like he's turning east while heading 360.
I got 10. I would like to remain seated. We're on board and going back to the airport. And on demand, so please remain quiet.
Okay, it's United 93 calling. United 93, understand, have a bomb on board. Go ahead. Executive 956, did you understand that transmission?
Okay, affirmative. He said there was a bomb on board.
And that was all you got out of it also?
Okay, affirmative.
93, go ahead.
That aircraft you can't get a hold of, has he turned to the east now?
He just turned to the east also. United 93, you hear Cleveland Center. Okay, American 1060 and Executive 956, we just lost the target on that aircraft.
Okay, 956, we had a visual on him, just stand by.
Do you have a visual on him now?
We did, but we lost him at the turn.
You can make a turn back to 220 heading, let me know if you can see him.
Yeah, he's still there. We got him for 956.
He's still there. Northwest of you, about 25 miles.
Affirmative for 956.
Executive 956, fighting 180.
Hey, we're making a turn at 956. He appears to be heading right towards us.
American 1060, do you see anybody northwest of you? Can you shoot back that far there?
We're looking now, sir.
United 93, Cleveland, do you still hear the center? United 93, do you still hear Cleveland? United 93, United 903, do you hear Cleveland? United 93, United 93, Cleveland. United 93, United 93, do you hear Cleveland Center?
Do you see any activity on your right side, smoke or anything like that?
Negative, we're searching. Yeah, we do have a smoke puff now at about, probably 2 o'clock. It appears to be just a dark cloud, like a puff of black smoke.
My God. During the hijacking of the airplanes, the hijackers used weapons to stab or kill aircraft pilots, flight attendants, and passengers. Reports from phone callers from the planes indicated that knives were used by the hijackers to stab attendants in at least one case, a passenger during two of the hijackings as well. The official version states three buildings in the World Trade Center complex collapsed due to structural failure on the day of the attack. The South Tower, that's number two, fell at approximately 9:59 a.m. after burning for 56 minutes in a fire caused by the impact of United Airlines Flight 175. The North Tower, that's number one, collapsed at 10:28 a.m. after burning for approximately 102 minutes. When the North Tower collapsed, debris heavily damaged the nearby 7 World Trade Center building. Its structural integrity was further compromised, they say, by fires, and the building collapsed later in the day at 5:20 p.m. But how, as some continue to say. Up next, architect Richard Gage, the 9/11 Truth Movement. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Richard Gage, founding member of AE911Truth.org. He's been a practicing architect for 20 years and has worked on most types of building construction, including numerous fireproof steel frame buildings. Tonight you are going to hear his views on what happened to those buildings during 9/11. I had the opportunity to meet Richard last weekend at the ConspiracyCon conference, by the way, up there near San Jose. Richard, it was a delight to meet you.
Thank you, George. It was great meeting you, too.
Tell me a little bit about you, about Richard Gage. This is truly a topic that some will be upset about. Others will sit back and go, I always thought that. But I want to know about Richard Gage for a moment. Architect, tell me about your background.
Well, I've been a licensed architect for about 20 years, and I'm a member of the American Institute of Architects. I became interested in these three high-rise collapses about 3 years ago, when I heard on the radio David Ray Griffin, a researcher who was talking on Guns and Butter, Bonnie Faulkner's program at KPFA in Berkeley here. It was quite disturbing. I had never heard any alternative theory to the way these towers were destroyed prior to that date, not one, and it just hit me like a 2x4 because Dr. Griffin was talking about all of this whole different set of evidence than we ever heard about from the mainstream media, from the official reports, and it was completely contradictory. And I'm going, this must be a lie. This must be a conspiracy theory. What's going on here? Problem is, I checked it out and very carefully, and found myself not alone, but in the midst of millions of people in the growing 9/11 truth movement that were studying these things and talking to people. It's a grassroots movement spreading by mouth. It's not something you find in the mainstream media.
And it's not just Richard Gage anymore, is it?
Well, and that, I just came on the scene late, just 3 years ago. There's been millions of people upset about these basic fabrications from the official reports since day one. So I'm a Johnny come lately. Certainly, Stephen Jones was on the beat, a physicist formerly from Brigham Young University, doing analysis in the dust, which was ubiquitous throughout the World Trade Center. David Ray Griffin was there doing lots of work, and many others, notable 9/11 researchers. All I did was try to package this together to appeal to architects and engineers, and I founded Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth as a result of this set of evidence, which just really kind of came together very nicely. Evidence which we didn't even know about until the last couple of years, much of it.
Tonight, Richard, we're going to concentrate on the buildings. We're not really going to get into the theories of the planes and who was aboard them and everything else. That'll be for a later discussion with some other people. But I want you to concentrate tonight on your expertise and to tell us why you and some of the other members of the organization have come to the conclusions that we will talk about as well. Where were you during that morning of 9/11?
I was in my bedroom, And I was in a state of shock as I turned the TV on and found my rational judgment suspended. And I say that because people ask me this question. And why didn't I see that these buildings were clearly, explosively demolished? First of all, Building 7 I didn't see at all that day. Some did, but we haven't seen it on mainstream media since. But relative to the Twin Towers, which we saw over and over again with huge mushroom clouds exploding outside of the footprint of these buildings, I just didn't have any thoughts other than fear and the world, is it coming to an end? We didn't know when the next attack would happen. I mean, we were relying completely on the media for information and the government, and they had their experts lined up to feed it to us.
Richard, I want you to address this one email I got today when they knew you were going to be on, and it was only one, to be fair to you, and it said, how dare Richard Gage come on and talk about what he's going to talk about when 3,000 people died, firemen, policemen, civilians, in that tragedy? I want you to address that because it's so important that people hear you talk about this. You're not a non-patriot. And I just want you to just explain your reaction to an email like that.
Well, it's extremely disturbing to hear this information. I am the first to acknowledge that. I heard it 3 years ago, and I was thinking the same thing, frankly. How dare you, Dr. David Ray Griffin, challenge the official story and the hearts of those who are grieving for their loved ones? After I got over that and looked at the evidence and realized that all of the evidence paints a picture that supports the theory of explosive controlled demolition, then the question shifts. It becomes, how can you not tell the American people the truth about these events? How can people who lost loved ones in these collapses not know the truth? We have to honor the fallen by the pursuit of truth. And so the whole argument changes.
Yeah, it sure does. Well, let's talk about the towers, if we can. Towers 1 and 2, explain them structurally, Richard.
Well, we have two of the, they were the highest buildings in the world. And in order to accomplish that, John Skilling, the original structural engineer, and his disciple, if you will, Leslie Robertson, worked together to create a new kind of a structure. They grouped the core columns around the elevator shafts, and we have 47 immense core columns welded one after the other all the way to the top. It's almost solid steel at the base. And this is the core of the structure, and it's called a tube structure because the perimeter columns are grouped around the outside.
Okay.
I think about 252 of them. And so we have this long span structure between the two, spanning up to 60 feet, allowing open office planning for the first time, really, in high-rise history.
Was this state-of-the-art at the time?
Oh, yeah. And it was lauded by the American Society of Civil Engineers as being an extraordinary structure, structurally and innovative in terms of what it achieved, the greatest engineering progress to mankind, they called it.
All right. Onward more with the structure, then, of this facility.
So we have thinner members, which are floor trusses, spanning between the grouped core columns in the middle and this perimeter tube on the outside, composed of 14-inch by 14-inch vertical columns with about 3 feet 9 inches on center. And they're welded together, three verticals, three horizontals, and then in turn they're bolted to each other. So this whole thing is able to be assembled massively like an erector set. And so the official story faults the trusses, the lighter floor trusses, which had 4-inch thick and reinforced concrete on top, and then 5-inch thick reinforced concrete in the core. So these floor trusses are faulted because the fires are they're more vulnerable to the fires, which NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, responsible ultimately for the final report in 2005, they talk about massive fires, which we don't have evidence for. In the case of the South Tower, the fires were actually going out at the time the building collapses, as you mentioned, 56 minutes after the original plane impact. But these trusses sag as a result of the fires is the theory. Then what happens is they pull, the original, the FEMA theory says they pulled away from the perimeter columns, and then we have a pancaking collapse due to unzippering around the perimeter.
Now, all right, so towers one and two, though, are carbon copies of each other, basically.
This
right?
is true.
And how about building seven?
Well, just to finish this thought, NIST changed the entire theory of how the building collapsed, both towers. When they came up with the column failure theory, blaming the persistence of the connection between these floor trusses and the perimeter columns, because then we can blame actually the fire, which is blaming the terrorist, which allows Mr. Silverstein to collect on his terrorist insurance, $5.6 billion. So we have a whole new theory now. Either way, we would be looking for a set of floors down at the bottom of both towers, and we'll talk about that evidence in a moment. Relative to Building 7, it was also a unique structure. In 1986, it was built. We have a very strong moment frame resisting perimeter. That means the columns and the beams are very rigidly welded to each other. And the unique part of this structure particularly is that it's built over an existing Con Ed substation, so it had massive trusses spanning.
Was it built better than Towers 1 and 2, in your opinion?
Oh, they're all admirably lauded, if you will, by the proponents of the official story. They were exceptionally structured buildings. No part of the official story team faults the structure of these buildings. It's the fires that they find fault with, the causative factor, that is.
And how much was the insurance on these buildings that you'd mentioned?
Mr. Silverstein collected $5.68
billion. $5.68
billion? Yeah.
That's a
lot of money.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. I guess he used that to start rebuilding, I guess, huh?
Presumably.
And, I don't know, will he have any left over?
I don't know. I'm an architect.
You're an architect. Okay. All right. So, we saw planes hit the towers. We didn't see much happen around Building 7, yet that went down. We're going to talk about that, too. And then we'll talk about other anomalies in that area. Through the eyes of you, Richard, through the eyes of an architect, I remember watching these towers collapse. And, you know, I come from St. Louis, where there's an incredible wrecking company there called Spiritus. They're one of the best in the world for taking down buildings. And I used to remember seeing video of the work they did. And buildings that are taken down came down the same way. I mean, they have this pancake maneuver, and they just go right down. So when we come back, Richard, let's get into this now. Let's get your views. Let's get the official story on what caused the collapse, and then we'll get your story. And then later on tonight, we'll open up the phone lines and get your questions on Coast to Coast AM. And our guest tonight, Richard Gage, the 9/11 Truth Movement. Richard Gage, architect, our guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Michael Meacher, former British environmental minister and member of Tony Blair's cabinet until June of 2003, was widely criticized for claiming that America knowingly failed to prevent the attacks. We'll have other stories and quotes throughout the night on other people as well. Now, Richard, tell us the official version of what the 9/11 Commission reported in the collapse of the towers.
Well, the 9/11 Commission was superseded by the FEMA report and the NIST report, again, the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Okay.
The basic theory is in the Twin Towers, that we have massive fires which caused the sagging of floor trusses, which caused the pulling in of the perimeter column, which caused the column failure theory, that's the name, column failure theory, causing the entire building to come down. The whole problem is that this type of fire-induced collapse with jet plane impacts would not have produced the incredibly symmetrical display of mushrooming clouds with an even symmetrical collapse, which was way too fast and too even and overwhelmingly explosive in the case of the Twin Towers, for it to be a result of fires. In a fire-induced collapse, we would expect large gradual deformations and asymmetrical collapse, or the building would begin to fall over, not straight down through the path of greatest resistance, the 80,000 tons of structural steel designed to resist any kind of a collapse like this, with a safety factor of 3 to 5. That means that the building is 3 to 5 times stronger than it needs to be. So how can this 15-story section in the North Tower, for instance, drive down the rest of the building at 2/3 of free fall acceleration, which is almost free fall acceleration, like the fastest a brick dropping down? It's continuously accelerating straight down through the path of greatest resistance. Architects, engineers understand that that can't happen.
It was like a movie, Richard. I mean, one burns for 56 minutes and collapses. Another burns for 102 minutes and collapses. I've seen a lot of building fires in my career. These buildings haven't collapsed. You know, they're charred, they're burned, but they stay up. These came down almost like on cue, didn't they?
Well, yes. In fact, they came down rapidly and suddenly without these gradual deformations. And we have an immediate and sudden acceleration without any jolt or impact. In other words, no resistance from the structure below. This is analyzed by David Chandler on our website, as is all of this evidence, which is very nicely laid out at www.ae911truth.org. And we have on there the DVD, actually, that can be purchased to look at, but you can also watch some of it quite freely and look at the PowerPoint presentation that we use in the 100 presentations we've done for architects, engineers, and others all around the country and in Canada and across Europe. So I encourage your listeners to take a look at this evidence. It is quite startling. Again, that website is ae911truth.org.
All right, now let's move over to Building 7 for a moment. I didn't see it. It wasn't hit. I don't know what kind of debris got over to it, but and we'll get into the pulled line in just a moment, but the official version, what brought that down, the official version?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. There were these beams that we'll talk about and columns ejected out of the side of the Twin Towers landing up to 600 feet away. Some of these hit the World Trade Center 7, and they caused some fires, which is interesting in and of itself. But there's 8 to 10 fires, and the videos and photos that we have of these buildings show fairly small fires and then a lot of smoke on the south side of this building. What we're told is that these massive roaring fires the last couple of hours of the building's life on floors 12 and 13 caused, which we don't have photographic or video evidence of, by the way, that evidence suggests that those fires were out at least by an hour and a half before the building collapsed at 5:20 in the afternoon. By the way, this building, this is a 47-story skyscraper, the third tower to be destroyed on 9/11. It wasn't hit by an airplane. So it's a model example for us to look at without the excuse, if you will,
right.
of the airplane
right.
that the official story uses in the case of the World Trade Center Twin Tower. So what we have is these fires are supposed to have caused a new phenomenon never before seen in high-rise history. I mean, no steel frame high-rise building has ever collapsed due to fire, never, except on 9/11 we have three. And so, I mean, there's examples of very hot, very large, and very long-lasting fires in the history right here in the United States, in Los Angeles and New York. We have fires that burned 12, 17 hours over multiple floors, and they don't come down. In fact, building number 5 on the World Trade Center was completely engulfed in flames, and it was still standing after the after 9/11.
Richard, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to answer your question. Sorry. We have this phenomena called thermal expansion, which NIST blames the collapse of this building on. Normal office fires, we're told. Not impact from the North Tower. Diesel fuel. All of these things were initially put forth as the reasons these buildings came down. Now they say, no, it's just a normal office fire is causing the expansion of 50-foot-long beams, causing a girder to fall off of its feet on column 79, causing 9 floors successively to collapse, and then column 79 buckles, and this lateral instability transfers somehow, magically, in just seconds, all the way across the interior of the building, and then the entire building comes down in 6.5 seconds at free-fall acceleration in the first 100 feet. The first 8 stories. The building, our problem is that the building can't collapse straight down through the path of greatest resistance, in this case, the 40,000 tons of structural steel designed to resist such a collapse in 6.5 seconds with 400 structural steel connections failing per second. Can't happen.
All right, give me your theory. Give me the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, its theory on the three towers that collapsed.
Well, first of all, what we look at is the evidence. And this is evidence that NIST and FEMA and the 9/11 Commission report neglected to even mention. And it is key and voluminous evidence. And what we're talking about, for instance, in the case of Building 7, is what's found at the base of the building. We have several tons of molten iron found in pools by first responders, by the firemen, by the cleanup workers, by structural engineers, including Leslie Robertson and his associate Richard Garlock, who are quoted as citing pools of literally molten steel, is what they called it. This is also documented, the melting of steel, by FEMA in their Appendix C, which NIST subsequently ejected from the record. This is the complete hiding of this evidence, if you will. What do they find? They find in the two pieces, the only two pieces of steel that they kept from Building 7, because the rest of it was shipped to China for recycling prior to the report coming out in May of 2002, which concluded that they have no faith in their original hypothesis that the buildings came down by fire. So, in fact, they said further research investigation is necessary in order to get at what really happened here. But unfortunately, for those hoping to find out what happened, all of the steel was sent to China for recycling.
Yeah, they did get rid of the steel pretty fast, didn't they?
And there was no, theoretically, there was nobody who died in this building. So what did they find in the two pieces that they did save? They found intergranular melting, rapid oxidation, sulfidation, evaporation at the ends of some of these beams. This does not happen by normal office fires. The firemen were extremely disturbed. The fire protection engineers were disturbed. This is a complete anomaly. Hot sulfur corrosion attack on the steel. Well, where in the world could this molten iron, intergranular melting with molten iron and sulfur come from? Well, sulfur happens to be a key ingredient in thermate, which is a form of thermite when you add sulfur to it. So Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter.
It's not an explosive, but it helps cut through steel, like you said.
Yeah, that's what an incendiary does.
Yep.
And with sulfur in it, it lowers the melting point of the steel, so it makes it a much faster, easier job. So we have, what do we find in all of this molten iron? Well, first of all, Dr. Stephen Jones has sent a piece of this previously molten iron from these cools, and he concludes quite clearly that it is not melted steel at all. It's structural. It's molten iron. It has the chemical evidence in it also of thermite. In addition to sulfur, we have iron, oxygen, aluminum, manganese, fluorine.
Richard, could thermite have gotten into the Bill Towers any other way other than being put there for these purposes we'll talk about? I mean, would it have been there naturally because of the welding jobs or anything in the quantity that it was found?
Well, you mean that in the building prior to the collapse?
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Well, there's no reason for thermite to be in a building. This is an incendiary. It would be highly illegal.
Okay.
First of all, and it couldn't have been put there like afterwards by the iron workers, because we're talking about pools, several tons of molten iron. They were pulling up these huge 9 foot by 3 foot by 4 foot. And so forth, chunks of fused molten metal. Architect Bart Vorsanger describes it. You can see all of this on the website again, ae911truth.org. The problem is that this molten iron has in it the chemical evidence of thermite, and it is very disturbing because it's not only the molten iron, but the ends of some of these beams that have slags that carry these unique chemical constituents too. Now, molten iron, iron is a constituent of structural steel, structural steel contains several other alloys which are missing in this analysis. So we're talking about molten iron has iron itself has no reason for being in the building. Also, it's not leached somehow out of the structural steel, in other words, and somehow manganese, fluorine, aluminum, oxygen are added to it. No, this is a key smoking gun, one of 20 or 30 that we highlight on our website, and that causes the 700 architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth that have now signed on to our petition demanding a new investigation with subpoena power.
Was the thermite mentioned to the 9/11 Commission when it was conducting its investigation?
No, but the FEMA report did documented quite clearly in Appendix C. It is straight up, and they have no idea what created it. There have been some responses from Professor Sisson at Polytechnic University, I believe it is, Worcester. And he suggests, well, maybe it was the calcium sulfate leached out of the gypsum board to somehow attack the steel. This is ludicrous because it is inert sulfur in calcium sulfate in gypsum board, and never before has the substance designed to protect buildings from fire ever turned around and attacked the steel that it's supposed to be protecting.
Assuming thermite was placed in the towers at a later date, when might it have happened, and how would they have gone about it? I mean, those are big towers. Somebody would have seen something eventually. So tell me your theories on that.
Well, the interesting thing about the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth is that we cite the evidence. When we're asked to speculate about how this might have got there, we don't have enough evidence to speculate appropriately. This is why we need to and must have an investigation. And if your listeners are disturbed about the evidence and want to know how these materials got there, then I encourage them to sign our petition demanding a real investigation, and to write every congressman, every radio station, newspaper, and to call into talk shows until we get a real investigation, because unless all of us stand up, we will not get that.
How would it have been placed? on the steel, on the metal? Would it have been sprayed? Would it have been put there in sacks all over the place? How would it have been laid out?
Well, there's a couple of different ways this can be done. Presumably in Building 7, where we do have witnesses, multiple witnesses, that hear sounds of explosions at the onset of the collapse of this building, including whistleblower Craig Bartmer and of the New York Police Department, Kevin McPadden, former Air Force medic, who's a first responder, and others. We have witnesses who hear the sounds of explosions, and they see windows busting out at the lower floors, then the building coming down. This is classic controlled demolition.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get at your question, and now I've forgotten.
I was going to ask you, how did they, not when, okay, but in what ways would they have put thermite in a building?
Yeah. And so we do have sounds of explosions, which suggest an incendiary is not particularly explosive. So what we have to do is look at some more evidence to answer this question, and that is found in all of the dust voluminous throughout lower Manhattan and beyond, 4 to 6 inches thick throughout all of lower Manhattan, is this pulverized concrete as finely powdered as talcum powder, some of it. Very, very interesting. Dr. Jones, a physicist formerly from Brigham Young University, analyzes this dust. And what does he find in it? Molten iron spheres, billions of them, that are smaller, most of them, than the human hair.
Huh.
Where in the world does this stuff come from? So this is the key that points back at what might have happened. It turns out that these spheres are indeed molten iron, and they have, again, aluminum, iron, manganese, fluorine. Many of them have sulfur. How could they have gotten there? Well, if you had thousands of cutter charges throughout the columns and beams in this building.
What are cutter charges?
This would be explosives,
okay.
Normally used in explosive controlled demolition.
All right, to bring down buildings, okay.
You would have thousands of them, yeah. And these are normally high-energy explosives, which produce very large bangs, loud bangs, and bright flashes, which we don't have that particular evidence. We have much more subdued explosions, but still heard, and flashes in the case of the Twin Towers. But this stuff has in it, if you had thermite cutter charges for the first time in history, now we're talking about thermite being used to bring down high-rise buildings, it would produce atomized molten iron, and this would form itself into spheres, which is what a liquid does because of its surface tension.
Let's talk more about this, Richard, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And as you say, Richard, a lot of these other technical things that we talk about here are on your website, and people can easily access that. I want to get your take on Popular Mechanics, which tried to prove that conspiracy theories were all wrong, unsupported by the facts generated by the events of 9/11. Now, this was prior to the thermite being found there. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it was also prior to NIST pulling out the rug from underneath Popular Mechanics in their official report, which just came out last November with Building 7. For instance, Popular Mechanics was telling us that, this is the diesel fuel, massive diesel fuel because of the generators in the building.
Right.
Well, that was proved to be wrong. There's no smoke coming out of the building that's diesel fuel smoke from the ventilators where the diesel engines were or anywhere else. And they've also suggested that it was the massive damage from the beams coming out of World Trade Center North Tower. But this was also withdrawn by NIST because they had to conclude that there's no real evidence for massive damage. And the place where they fault the building for initiating the collapse in column 79 under the east penthouse because it falls a few seconds prior to the overall collapse. So Popular Mechanics is left without even an explanation of the free fall collapse, which NIST also acknowledged. And so there's nothing left for them to stand on. In fact, there was very little for them to stand on initially because they, in their overall thesis, they attack many straw men, which they set up. There's a lot of kooky theories, floating around about these events. They're not all evidentiary based. And so people like Popular Mechanics who want to try to debunk the alternative theories that are so supported by all of this evidence end up attacking that which is not evidence at all.
There are some who say, you know, is it possible that the thermite could have been put in there by some of these crazed fundamentalists, these terrorists, over years? They tried to take it down once. Is that possible that they could have somehow infiltrated and did it again? And I guess that's possible, Richard. And what you're calling for in your group, you just want another investigation. You want these facts out there, don't you?
Yeah, but we also have rational minds, and we ask ourselves, you know, how could explosives, in this case, nanothermite explosives, which is very different than traditional thermite, which we're going to talk about in a moment. But how could these have been planted in the World Trade Center Twin Towers without anybody knowing? That's a
right.
fair question.
And a huge question. You're right.
Well, sure. I mean, these are three of the most highly secure buildings in the United States outside the Pentagon, after all. I mean, Building 7 had in it the CIA, the IRS, the Department of Defense, the Securities and Exchange Commission,
and
Mayor Giuliani's what?
Wasn't there gold in one of these buildings?
Well, there's gold. There's gold, a lot of gold in the Twin Towers as well, of course, and they're a primary target. So they're very well secure. They're very secure buildings. So how could somebody have gotten in? Well, if one had access to the elevator hoistways in the Twin Towers, they could easily plant explosives in the core column and beam area of these buildings without being detected. Now, they'd be making a lot of noise. It'd be better if you had a cover, like, say, an elevator modernization, which would give you an excuse to be there. Well, it turns out that Elevator World March 2001 documents the largest elevator modernization in the world going on 9 months prior to 9/11.
Interesting.
So it's very possible that these could have been placed during that effort. In fact, ACE Elevator had the contract. There were 85 of their employees that fled after the first plane impact, and they were supposed to have stayed and helped the firefighters rescue the people. This was quite a scandal, and it was documented in USA Today.
Well, Richard, if these towers were taken down, then it's even a bigger conspiracy than the possibility that there are those who knew what these terrorists were up to and simply turned their cheek, let it happen. This would mean that they're implicated in it, that they planned it, and that there's a bigger scheme, I would guess. Would you agree?
I think that's a fair conclusion. After all, Al-Qaeda also did not have access to this particular material, which Dr. Jones found throughout all of the samples of this dust, which in some cases was 12 inches thick in various places. He finds in four particular samples hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of these tiny micro-thin chips of very special thermite. It's interesting. The largest one is a 16th of an inch long. It's red on one side, gray on the other. The gray side appears to be some sort of primer, interestingly enough. The red side is composed primarily of iron oxygen, also aluminum, manganese, fluorine, and in some cases sulfur. It's very high-tech stuff because the particle size is 1,000 times smaller than the human hair, the iron and the aluminum powders. this is nano size. This is 100 nanometers across. It's extremely sophisticated stuff, made only in highly sophisticated Defense Department contracting laboratories. It's not made in a cave in Afghanistan.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has said under waterboarding that he, you know, was the mastermind of this entire scheme. That doesn't negate a conspiracy, does it?
I would probably admit the same thing under those circumstances. I understand it's extremely difficult environment to think in. So I don't know what else to say about that. But I'll tell you this. He didn't have access to these materials unless they were provided to him by somebody.
Now, that is the big question. As I've talked to Alex Jones so much about, Richard, where he originally said government did it, and he's backed off a lot on that, too, where he's now willing to accept the possibility that some groups were working in tandem on this together. Would you accept that possibility?
Well, sure. And that's why we need a new investigation. Let's find out what groups. I mean, maybe it wasn't just was it our government? We don't know. David Ray Griffin has done some very interesting research on the behavior of governmental officials and other military officials. This isn't an area of research of mine. What I find fascinating is that the 25-page peer-reviewed paper that Dr. Jones and his team of scientists, including Neil Tarrant, who have documented in several different redundant experiments done in different labs in different countries, documented the results of this nanothermite in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal just recently, within the last couple of months. This documents this 100-nanometer particulate size material. It can't form itself from a building falling with the steel columns somehow mixing themselves with aluminum cladding into these extremely small particles. No, can't happen. And these are found in samples also, by the way, on the top of the skyscraper across the street, found in the Brooklyn Bridge. Just 10 minutes after the sample was collected, after the collapse of the Twin Towers, and various other places, an apartment across the street from the South Tower, all of them have the same unignited thermite chip. They also have the ignited result, which is the previously molten iron spheres. And so it's not from the welding equipment that was the cutting torches that were operated after the cleanup began. That is ruled out.
You know, as I was into a little discussion with a friend of mine who claims that a company, I'm not going to give the name, obviously, he says it's a corrupt company. All they care about is taking advantage of people. They do it in very strange, perhaps illegal ways. And he went on and on and on. And I said, what do you mean it's the company that's doing that? He says, well, the chairman of the board's doing this stuff and the president. And I said, now let's remove those two and put two people in with some integrity. And he said, well, then it's not a bad company. And I said, so the answer is it's not the company that's doing this. It's the corrupt individuals who are involved with it. And I think the same is true of government, Richard. This is a great government. This is a great country. But there are people within it who are as corrupt as anybody I've ever known.
Well, let's talk about a few of those people, because we obviously have huge problems in the investigation of NIST. And there were individuals placed in prominent positions by the Bush administration in charge of the NIST investigation. And it turns out that not just the NIST investigation, but also FEMA, we have some of the same, and by the way, so the volunteers from the American Society of Civil Engineers. These individuals worked themselves all the way through, many of them, most of them, from beginning to end through these three supposedly unbiased, independent reports.
But the same individuals are involved in each of them. Seem to have Defense Department contracts of at least $10 million each annually. This is not an independent investigation by any means. What's worse is that several of them seem to be experts in nanothermite technology itself, from SAIC, the University of Maryland College Park. We have also the NSWCIH, Naval Surface Warfare Center. These individuals, including Foreman and Stephen Margolis, Arden Bennett, Hratch Samerjian, and several others, are apparently leading the investigation, or in a position to lead the investigation away from all of this evidence found for thermite and nanothermite.
Larry Silverstein, the owner of the buildings, was quoted as saying, "We decided to pull it in regards to Building 7. Now, as far as I'm concerned, when you say we decided to pull it, you're either talking about pulling out altogether or pulling the building down.
Well, what he says is there's been such terrible loss of life, and he says this on public television, I guess a few months after 9/11, on America Rebuild. Such terrible loss of life, maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And so we gave the order, and we watched the building come down.
Okay, if they pulled it, if they demolished it, and it had collapsed later in that day at 5:20 p.m., so several hours after the initial impact in the other towers, how did they do it? I mean, was it already pre-wired? I mean, I find that hard to believe, but I mean, what did they do? Sneak into a building that part of it was on fire and put explosives in it to pull it? What did they do?
Well, this is a key question, as it clearly takes months to engineer and plan an explosive demolition. Any controlled demolition expert will tell you this. So it didn't happen the afternoon of 9/11. We know that. And buildings are not wired for destruction being occupied. We know that. No insurance company would insure such a building, and nobody would occupy it knowingly. And I've never heard about it as an architect, and I've never talked to any architect or structural engineer who has. So what we're talking about is clearly that the explosives had to have been in there illegally, surreptitiously, and for planned and executed months in advance. This is clearly a conspiracy, and that's why we're not afraid of the term conspiracy theorist. Even the official story is a conspiracy. 19 fundamentalist hijackers fired. That's the official story. The only question is, who are the conspirators with this new look at this new evidence?
Why does it seem, Richard, that the mainstream media seems reluctant to try to ask for a new investigation or to try to bring this forward again? It's almost as if no one wants to talk about it.
Well, that's clear. No one wants to talk about it. We've been screaming at it to the media, to the Congress, for 3 years since we started. We're going to be taking 1,000 petition signatures to Congress of architects and engineers this October. We have
that's huge.
Limited expectations on the receptivity in Congress, but we thoroughly believe that we're not going to stop. There's clearly some sort of problem also with the media, who refuses to pick this story up. Thank you, George, for being a key exception. And there are others, such as in Fresno, we recently got on a Fox affiliate for 7.5 minutes, and we laid out a lot of evidence for 7.5 minutes. I encourage your listeners to Google KMPH, that's Carl, Mary, Paul, Henry, Fox TV, and Richard Gage, G-A-G-E, and they can watch this rather extraordinary infusion into mainstream media coverage of 9/11 truth, specifically AE 9/11 truth. By the way, evidence is all laid out on not one, but two different DVDs, which we have on our website, ae911truth.org. And we have a two-hour research edition of Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction, that can be purchased. And also, there is a second companion DVD, which is an abridged version, several abridged versions. We have a 10-minute, a 30-minute, and a 60-minute version of this material that can be taken into architects' offices or executives, people who have only, you know, that much time. We also have bonus material on this particular DVD, excellent physics analysis by a high school physics teacher, David Chandler, who single-handedly almost, with some other help from 9/11 Truth members, forced NIST to acknowledge the free-fall collapse of Building 7. And before that, they were saying, oh, it wasn't free-fall. It was like 40% of free-fall. But clearly, we got them into a corner about that. They were also drawn into a corner about their denial of molten metal found underneath all three World Trade Center towers, where they have been in complete denial. Why is that? Because the official story cannot even begin to account for the temperatures required to melt steel. Office fires are only about 1,500 degrees maximum. But steel doesn't melt until twice that temperature.
I guess, too, one of the most bizarre aspects of all of this, Richard, isn't in the building, but was the pristine condition of apparently Mohammed Atta's passport and Saddam al-Sugami, another one of the hijackers, where these two passports seem to float down in pristine condition. Don't you find that strange?
Well, yeah, there's a whole lot of strange findings relative to the hijackers. Apparently six or more of them were alive after 9/11 and interviewed on BBC and so forth. This is all documented by researchers who go into this area beyond the collapses or the destruction of these buildings, David Ray Griffin being the most notable exception. And so he really nails these things, including cell phone calls and the behavior of the president and the vice president and so forth.
We'll take a quick break here, Richard. We'll come back with more. In the next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. Richard, this push, this movement that you're behind, what has it done for your personal career? I'm curious.
Well, I would say my career has shifted. I was a gainfully employed architect managing a $400 million project, which, by the way, is now standing like bones in a graveyard because the developer went bankrupt due to the economy. But 18 of us were laid off, and I took the opportunity to work on 8911 Truth full time, which enabled me to go, for instance, to the AIA convention here in San Francisco. 20,000 architects were filing by, and we had the opportunity to hand 1,000 DVDs and brochures, and we signed up 60 of them on our website. And by the way, we have now several architects and engineers signed up tonight as a result of our show. So I want to thank you very much and encourage everybody that anyone can sign our petition, not just architects and engineers. We have categories for several others. We have nuclear physicists, scientists, all kinds of other specialties. But the interesting thing about the architects and engineers at the convention is that they look at the widescreen television of Building 7 coming down, straight down at free fall speed, symmetrically, into its own footprint. And we ask them, did you know about this building? No. Did you know that would you believe that it was part of the World Trade Center complex? I didn't know about it. They don't know about the third worst structural failure in modern history. And when we show it to them, they immediately understand that a building can't do that, and because of fire, because everybody knows fire causes very slow, large, gradual deformations. The building tips over. This building comes straight down through the path of greatest resistance. And once they see that, there's the problem, because there's a psychological block to the implications of this information. But once they see it, we pretty much have them hooked. They agree. That is a controlled demolition. There is no question. Then they have to wrestle with the reality of that, as you have started to do here tonight for us, George. It is extremely disturbing to the psyche to suggest, because we know that, you know, Al-Qaeda didn't do the controlled demolition. I mean, that's a rational conclusion.
They may have done the planes. They may have done the planes, but we know they weren't part of a controlled demolition.
And so we have to have a real investigation, and that's what we're asking for, and that's why we have so many architects and engineers who have seen this, virtually all of them, by the way, who see these presentations that I do across the country and in their offices and around the world, and then when they see the DVD, they end up agreeing with us, because we always do a show of hands, like we did in Santa Clara this weekend, where we have an overwhelming majority of those who believed the official story before the presentation or who were unsure now after the presentation raise their hands agreeing with us that, yeah, these are controlled demolitions. Then we have to wrestle with the psychology, because we're not hardwired to comprehend that if Al-Qaeda didn't do this, well, who did? You know, we have to look inside. And this is why we obviously hear about some sort of inside job with 9/11.
If we did the investigation, Richard, and we found out that there was more than just Al-Qaeda involved, that there's a bigger group out there that is funding, manipulating, and doing whatever they're doing. And I'm going to ask you a few other questions about that in just a second. What do we do about it if a commission agrees? Do they arrest? Do they just say, oh, well? What do you think they should do?
Well, I'm glad you're asking that question. That puts us forward in history, and I don't know how far forward. I don't know how many months or years this is going to take, but at least we're speaking to upwards of 3 or more million people right now about it. Prior to this, we had thousands, hundreds. So thank you for the opportunity, but it will come to naught if every one of your listeners does not take action as a result of this information and the follow-up action, which is looking at our website, AE911 Truth, and the DVD, and getting clear that what I'm speaking is actually the truth and not some sort of crazy conspiracy theory, then if they call their representative, if they sign our petition, get our free email newsletter, by the way, everybody who signs the petition gets informed on a monthly basis, roughly, what we're about, how the progress we're making in the mainstream media, in Congress, then we have to have a new investigation. It will swell by millions, the 9/11 truth movement. And no change in society like this has ever happened from the top down. It is only a groundswell of people who care enough about their country, who love their country enough to take sacrifices, quit their jobs, earn half the salary that they were making, in my case, and put a massive effort into organizing people and getting attention to those who really don't want to acknowledge this, like President Obama just the other day saying, let's get it, guys, Al-Qaeda. 3,000 people. This is not open to debate. It's fact to be dealt with. He actually said this. So he's come out on the side of those supporting the official story because he works for the people who put him in power. And that's probably as far as we need to go with that. But he can't afford, at least at this time, to buck the system that he is an intimate part of.
Did you look at the Pentagon at all in Flight 77, American Airlines Flight 77? Did you have a chance at all to investigate that?
Well, it turns out that the evidence of the Pentagon has been analyzed and reviewed by a number of different people in the 9/11 truth movement, and they don't all agree on what amounts to. And so it turns out to be a hotbed of argumentation, but they all agree on the following, that there are dozens of cameras that recorded what did or didn't hit the Pentagon. And in the case of the Sitco station in the hotel across the street, the FBI was there within 5 minutes.
They grabbed the video. They've never released them to us.
And they won't show it. Now, if they have nothing to hide, why will they not show this paper? It's 5 frames that don't show any airplane, but a stream of curious-looking smoke and a red-flamed explosion, which is even more curious.
Some of the bizarre conspiracies, Richard, that I've heard with regards to, for example, Flight 77, with those who say a plane did not hit the Pentagon, at least this one, they say the plane landed somewhere, they took the occupants off. I think they would have said something by now. Or it's they've even said they landed somewhere and everyone on that plane was murdered. I don't think that's the case at all. What's your take? And again, you don't speculate, so you probably don't know.
Oh, yeah, this is pure speculation. There's been a number of people who have done some research on this. I won't even suggest where to go for this because if people Google the Pentagon, they can find out a lot of very interesting facts and speculations as well. It doesn't do us any good as technical building professionals to speculate about what might have happened, who might have done this, how did this happen. We just get ourselves in a lot of hot water, and people can really then start to call us conspiracy theorists.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good point. So if there were a new 9/11 investigation, how would it be structured? Give me your take on that.
Well, we have a massive effort by the people, the hardworking truth bearers, 9/11 truth bearers in New York City, to put on the ballot a measure to have a new investigation. And they have over 45,000 signatures from city members toward that end. They need 65,000, and they are in great need, by the way, of support from your listeners. And so I would encourage everybody to go to that website, nyccan.org. That's New York City Coalition for Accountability Now, nyccan.org, and become a member so that you can actually, it takes money for these signatures, and I'm encouraging everyone actually not only to support NYCCAN, but to support us as well, because when we go to these conventions, by the way, it costs thousands of dollars at each one, and we don't have an independent source of funding. We have 100 sustaining members about right now, and we could use about 3 times that many. So I'm also encouraging your listeners to become sustaining members of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And that button is found on the right side of our website. But who would be on such a commission? Well, we would want somebody who is independent.
I'd want Ron Paul for one. I'd want him on that. I trust
him. He's a fairly independent character, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean,
he's been bucking the system from day one. Although he has not come out and actively supported a new 9/11 investigation.
No, he has not. I mean, he's going after the Federal Reserve. He's probably got his hands full.
Yeah, I imagine he does. Dennis Kucinich has also made voices for a new investigation, and we're delighted with that. Other than those two actively involved, somewhat actively involved in 9/11 truth, I would have to say. There is nobody else. It is mums is the word over there in Congress. We are going to be going in July to meet probably 10 to 15 members of Congress July 11th and 13th and 16th. When we go to the local AIA convention in Washington, D.C., and present this evidence again to architects. But we would need people who are independent of the banking industry, the insurance industry, the media, the defense industry, and the people on the 9/11 Commission all had compromised interests in those industries, all of whom, by the way, profited enormously from the events of 9/11. So we can't continue the same old here. It's going to be very difficult to find independent people and to get Congress to do this. It's going to take massive upswelling of people, people hearing this information and doing something about it.
This is what this is what my intuitive part tells me. I truly believe that members of Al-Qaeda were involved with this. I think these people were manipulated, and they were these hijackers were told what to do, and they thought they were going to be martyrs. I think Osama bin Laden, who also went by the name of Tim Osman, just so folks really understand what's going on, when the CIA brought him for a tour of the United States, including around L.A., that the connection there, Richard, is too bizarre. I don't think the shadow government ever washed its hands with bin Laden, and I don't think bin Laden ever washed his hands with the shadow government. I think they stayed in very close contact, not only throughout the Soviets' involvement in Afghanistan at the time, but afterwards as well. My theory is that they concocted this plan for this control of a one-world government. They hired someone like bin Laden and his group to do what they were going to do, and he was able to convince people like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to put a plan together like this, and that they went out and did it. I mean, they hate America, there's no doubt, and they were easy. All you had to do is sit down with them and say, here's some money, go ahead and do this. And there are just manipulators in this country and other countries who are trying to position themselves to take advantage of people, to take advantage of human beings. And I think that this was the beginning of their plan to try to just bring America down, and we see what's happening, and to try to put us under an umbrella of this control of a one-world government. I think it's a very sick thing that they're all doing. But my gut tells me, Richard, that this is what they did. And when you say controlled demolition, I'm not going to negate that. I think that's a very strong possibility put into the context of what this plan is. But that's my take, and I want your reaction to that.
Well, I will suggest that there are those who are searching this as well, and they have found the confession of Osama bin Laden on, I think it was December 13th or so, seems to have been, the one they played throughout all the media, seems to have been somebody else. And he's a very much fatter guy with a short nose. And so I would just simply encourage your listeners and yourself to Google Fatty Osama. That's the name he's to be known by. This is the one who confesses. There are several problems with this video found by the Defense Department in Afghanistan subsequent to the invasion. On the contrary, just a few days after 9/11, we have a tape recording of a different Osama who is denying involvement in the attack. And he says, if you want to know who did this, look to the shadow government within your own government, who wants to make this century a century of conflict between Islam and Christianity. Does that sound like a proud terrorist? And this is the one that the government, our government, was telling us, the media, not to play because it might contain clues to their terrorist sleeping cells in the United States. So I don't know about all that. I'm just saying that's something additional for research that people can look at. We don't go into that, of course, in our presentation.
Well, assuming all of this is real, your thoughts and everybody else's who will not accept the official line, why, Richard? I'm sure you've knocked your head against the wall trying to put this together. Why?
Why? Give me that again, George. Why?
Why did this all happen? Why?
Oh, that's an easy one. No, I'm just kidding. I am a fairly simple architect. I try not to and it's very difficult for me to understand why. I mean, I look at building collapses and evidence and thermal and spheres in the dust, and the big picture is much more interesting and much darker. We have been deceived. These are three deceptive controlled demolitions, as Kevin Ryan calls it, 11 researcher. We have been pulled over the eyes of most Americans. Many millions are waking up. President Obama would not have come out the other day and addressed this issue, as well as Vygotsky, who compares those who question the official versions of 9/11 to Holocaust deniers. That's Vygotsky. They're taking the heat seriously. They're having to respond at this point. It's in public discussion. This is an extremely important move. And so we're succeeding. So the veils are breaking down. And
but why, Richard? But why? That's my question is, why would they do this?
Well, they look at what happened after 9/11. We invaded two countries. Over a million people have been killed. But what would be the possible purpose? Let's look at Iraq. We know, everybody knows, that Iraq was based on a pack of lies.
But it's got to be more than just Afghanistan and Iraq. I want to ask you that again when I come back, and then we'll take phone calls with Richard Gage. All right, Richard, back to the why. Was it just for oil, power, control, or maybe all of the above? What do you think?
Well, it certainly could have been. I would refer your listeners to the Project for a New American Century, which is a think tank of neoconservatives, people of which ended up later in the Bush administration. And they had specific goals that they outlined on their website, which I understand are still there, Project for a New American Century. Google it. And what they say is these goals, which, by the way, included regional hegemony in the Middle East, space dominance, and a vast increase in the military budget, they say, further the process of transformation, and I'm quoting, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Now, that's bone-chilling to me.
Were they dumb enough to put that in print?
Yeah, absolutely. And some suggest that it's still there, although some others can't find it. But it was there, and it's documented very well in David Ray Griffin's book, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, which is an extraordinary research effort into the background, into 9/11, and the why, as you're saying. Also, we would need people to, you know, follow the money, find out who benefits, who are the industries that have interlocking boards of directors on each other's industries, the insurance industry, the banking industry, the Defense Department, the media. All of these move as a flock with each other's interests in mind and not those of the American people. So these things can be researched and found in David Ray Griffin's books. We don't go into them, but I would note that there are several world-class leaders who have come out and demanding a new investigation along with us, including Andreas von Bülow, former state secretary and defense minister of West Germany, the former president of Italy, Francisco Cossiga, who says the disastrous attack was planned and executed by the American CIA and other foreign intelligence, he suggests. Yukihisa Fujita, prominent senator, the leading opposition senator in the Diet, if you will, of Japan, who's been traveling around the world highlighting the inconsistencies in the official versions of the events and talking about controlled demolition. In fact, he's bringing us to Japan this December to speak in Tokyo and Kyoto to 500 people each, and also six other cities there. So we're very excited about that. Also, the former defense minister of of Canada, Paul Hellyer,
yep.
says, I'd like to get in a much more tougher, more in-depth inquiry. We have to get at the truth.
Paul's everywhere. He's also been a proponent of the UFO field. He's helped a lot of people there. Let's take some calls, Richard. You ready?
Yeah.
I'll come. They can agree with you. They don't have to. Let's take the calls. Reno, Nevada, we go west of the Rockies. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Sure.
I just think that this whole thing concerning the New World Order and things like that, that they use Saddam, because he was a rogue world leader, as a scapegoat, so that they could teach a lesson to anybody else who wouldn't get in line. They could say, look, this is how we set him up, and we wiped him out, and we can do the same to you. This is what you got to do. And I found it ironic what your guest said about Italy and Germany coming out against it, when Hitler was the ultimate at saying the bigger the lie, the more people will believe it. And that's what the government of the world is doing, trying to take control of it. And one last thing.
Sure.
Anybody know who Marvin Bush is?
Marvin Bush.
Yes.
I know the name.
He's George Bush's brother, and he was the head of security for the Twin Towers.
Did you know that, Richard Gage? Thank you, Mike, by the way.
Indeed. He was on the board of directors of Securicom, which became Stratasec, and we, in a new investigation, need clearly to look at the security company. There were several anomalies there, including bomb-sniffing dogs being removed on the weekends prior to 9/11, that have been documented by people. So a real investigation would bring out a lot of these things. And this, the first responders and the family members of the victims are with us. They are calling for a new investigation.
That's just weird.
What's that?
Marvin Bush was part of a company. That's just weird that watched the World Trade Center. I didn't know that.
Well, so was the cousin of George Bush, Wirt Walker III, on the same board of directors, as it turns out. Maybe we should ask them why the Twin Towers exhibited explosions 20, 40, and 60 stories down below the collapsing building. We're told by NIST that these are puffs of air, but they're pulverized building materials that occur at the center points of the building. Why do we have the total destruction of the Twin Towers down to its individual structural elements?
They were doing a security, listen to this, they were doing a security detail in the World Trade Center on September 6, okay, 2001. They had bomb-sniffing dogs that were abruptly taken out of the building. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating.
And what happened to the security cameras? There was something went wrong with them a couple days before this happened? That the power...
I don't know about that. There was a power down, apparently, in the upper half of one of the towers. I think it was the South Tower. I don't know much about that. I do know that over 100 first responders reported explosions and flashes of light at the onset of both of these towers. And this was not reported until August of 2005 because the city of New York was sued by the New York Times to gain access to these oral recordings of 500 first responders. And over 100 of them are talking about explosions and flashes of light, and there is no report of explosion in any of the official reports, 9/11 Commission reports, FEMA, or NIST. This is extremely disturbing, and yet we didn't have that evidence until August of 2005.
Next up, we go to Dan, driving around in Michigan, wildcard line. Dan, go ahead.
Yes, hi, George Norrie, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I was just thinking, you know, with this conspiracy theory that they blew up these buildings on, you know, that there was a reason behind it, and that they blew them up, and that the jets didn't actually cause the collapse of these buildings. The two towers, they fell because of they're saying that because of the jets fell into them, you know, flew into them and that.
Yeah.
Now, the other building that the jet didn't fly into obviously collapsed, but there was no jets fell into it. What I'm speculating is that perhaps that building was also set up to collapse, and that another jet was supposed to fly into there, but it never made it. And that jet that was supposed to fly into there was Flight 93.
Okay.
So in other words, it never made it. And then here, the building collapsed. They had it set up to collapse, but it didn't make it.
Well, that's an interesting theory. Now, they say 93 was supposed to hit the Capitol or the White House, according to Sheikh Khalid Mohammed. And Sheikh Mohammed, I don't know. Interesting theory, though, Richard Gage.
Well, he didn't know which it was supposed to hit, the White House or the Capitol. You would think if he was a mastermind, he would know. But let's talk about foreknowledge, because this implies that something was supposed to hit it. Well, it turns out that the BBC announces the collapse of this 47-story skyscraper 20 minutes before it happened.
Wasn't it in the background of the reporter?
That's true. He's saying it collapsed, and there it
you can see it in the background.
Yeah. And they apologize for this grievous error, citing the confusing events of the day.
Which is possible, right?
Does that make them psychic, though? I mean, are they predicting this? Interestingly enough, though, CNN also predicts this. They say that at 10:45, a 50-story building went down. A fireman was told this to a reporter who reported it live on CNN at about 10:45 or 11 o'clock, 15 minutes later. Had it come down, and there was no other 50-story buildings, by the way, that came down, but had it come down, it would have been completely shrouded in all of the massive dust from the Twin Towers. We might not even question it today. So the question your caller is alluding to is, was that building supposed to come down that early in the morning, and would it have if that plane had kept on its flight path?
That's a good possibility, though. I mean, interesting. Thanks for that call. And, of course, we know that European papers had headlines that Oswald was arrested as JFK's assassin before he was arrested. How'd that happen?
That's a good one.
Let's go to Salt Lake City, Utah. First-time caller. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, George. How's it going?
Good, Michael.
Love your show. And I have to say, nothing gets my blood boiling more than two types of guests you have: psychics, remote viewers, and conspiracy
theories. There you go. Okay, go ahead. Have at it.
Anyway, couple things. When you guys were talking about earlier about the windows exploding as the building was collapsing, you know, just people heard, saw the windows exploding outward. They heard the sounds of explosion. And when you have an office floor full of air and those, you know, those floors, mm-hmm. those windows are tight. When a building collapses on it, that air has to go somewhere. It goes out the path of least resistance. It blows out the windows.
Interestingly enough, these explosions are happening before the building comes down. Each of the witnesses are very specific about this. Before there's any motion in the building, they cite these explosions, and then they say, and then the building comes down. So this is really not the case, what you're suggesting.
Yeah, but when you watch the videos, all the windows you see are being blown out just before the building collapses on that particular floor. All the videos I've seen, I've never seen videos 20, 30, 40 stories below that. It's always just as the building.
Now, you're talking about, though, Richard, the lower buildings, aren't you?
Yeah.
The lower windows.
Well, I'm talking about Building 7 right now. Let's talk about the Twin Towers, because that's where the first responders heard these incredible sounds of explosions. And then we have racing explosions 20, 30, 40 stories down below the supposedly collapsing building. Is this racing series of explosions traveling almost as fast as the debris falling next to it. Look very closely on our website. You'll see this extraordinary third video of the North Tower collapse. It is extremely disturbing.
Okay, next up. Thanks for your call, Mike. Boy, the calls are rolling in on you. Let's go to Tom in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, George.
Hey.
A comment. Anybody who reads these books by David Ray Griffin, and especially Jim Mars, The Terror Conspiracy, can only come to one conclusion. Our government either let it happen, helped to make it happen, or God forbid, you know, we're behind it. Because never forget who created, trained, and funded Al-Qaeda in the first place.
We did.
Now, a previous caller stole some of my thunder, but I think this is really important to harp back on this. And this is this Marvin Bush and Wirt Walker III running the security for the World Trade Center, all the buildings. They also were in charge of United Airlines at the time and Dulles Airport, where Flight 77 was hijacked from. Okay? And it's really important for us to, you know, in David, one of David Ray Griffin's books, they only give like a paragraph or two to this stuff. And then they talk about some employee having a mysterious death. And I'd like to hear about what this mysterious death is all about, if it's known about. And before he answers that, let me see what else I got here.
Well, let's see. Before you even hang up, can you address that, Richard?
No, I'm not familiar with the mysterious death you're referring to, unless it's John O'Neill. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, they don't mention the name, Richard. But they talk about a mysterious death of an employee for Stratasec.
Oh, for Stratasec. I don't know about him.
Okay.
Barry Jennings was one of the individuals directly worked for Giuliani's Office of Emergency Management, and he cites experienced explosions inside Building 7 prior to its collapse.
Absolutely.
And it blew him up to the eighth floor. So there is no question about all of these explosions well before the collapse of that building.
You know, I'll sign off, George, with the following. Last night, Wayne Dyer said that you know, like 90% of the public doesn't read books or buy them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we got to simplify everything on these websites and everything like that for the masses, and simplify things, dumb it down a little bit, so that we energize the people. This applies to all governmental issues. This is what we got to do.
That's true. That's true. Hey, thanks for your call. There's a 1987 James Bond film, and I loved all those things, with Roger Moore, called The Living Daylights. And in that movie, on Saddleback, he was part of the Mujahideen. Now, those of you who just want to learn a little bit more about the Middle East, the Mujahideen ended up being Al-Qaeda. And I don't know how many people knew that, Richard, but the Mujahideen, which we trained to get the Soviets out of Afghanistan, the so-called freedom fighters, ended up being Al-Qaeda.
This is true.
Yep. Let's go next to Cornelius in Alexandria. You are up with us. Hey, Cornelius.
Hey, how you doing there, George?
Good.
Richard Gage, God bless both y'all. And Tommy and Gina, your call screeners, they're both great. Look, and George, happy belated birthday.
Well, thank you.
But anyway, my question is, what can we really do against this new world order except pray and everything and don't accept that chip? So that's my comment and question. So what can we, you know, really do? Can we really stop it? Or is it just something meant to be?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to get a chip, Richard. I don't think you're going to get a chip. And I mean, there's no question. This world is being divided into the haves and the have-nots, and I don't know how long that spread of difference can continue before the have-nots begin to say enough is enough. Tired of being pushed around, tired of this happening to me. But it's happening, and you can feel it. You can see it. But I'm not getting chipped, Richard.
Well, they have made their play, an extraordinary play in the setup and execution of 9/11, which has several key mistakes, which we're capitalizing on in the case of the three high-rise destruction.
But I don't think they care about mistakes. You know, they figure, who cares?
Well, maybe. But what we have, therefore, is a whole lot of evidence. And 9/11, therefore, is their Achilles heel, if there ever was one. So while all of these other conspiracies, if you will, are important and probably true that you've had on this site, on this radio show in the past, 9/11 is the one that will wake up the American people to this deception and this huge deception well beyond 9/11, as you've alluded to. And so we've got to capitalize on 9/11, and the way we do that is capitalize on the physical, science-based forensic evidence that over 700 architects and engineers now are highlighting as evidence of explosive controlled demolition. It is clear, it is convincing, it is waking up millions of people, and we've got to capitalize on it. We've got to do something. I mean, everybody needs to do something. It's critical.
But Richard, we're going to be back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Richard, I would guess that had we just simply gone in, took out bin Laden and left and never went into Iraq, a lot of this would have just kind of simmered down. But it never happened that way, did it?
No, it didn't. And that is more suggestion that these things were set up in order for those things to happen, that regional hegemony, as is suggested and desired by the Project for a New American Century neocon think tank, was planned and carried out. It's pretty clear once you look at the evidence that David Ray Griffin lays out in his book, New Pearl Harbor, Revisited.
You know, there's always been some talk, too, that the plans to go into Afghanistan were developed way before 9/11 and way before those attacks. It just seemed a little too organized.
In fact, it's been documented by Newsweek that the attack plans for Afghanistan were actually signed on September 10th, the day before 9/11. Google Newsweek. It's quite interesting.
Interesting. Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Final calls. Tom in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks.
George, Black Ops government insider, he was an engineer. His name was Philip Schneider. In 1995, he said that he participated in a retrofit of the WTC complex after the 93 basement car bomb attack. He stated that the explosives were placed on key structural supports linked to a computer hidden in the elevator system, which would detonate and implode the structure should they sway more than 20 degrees. Now, could the aircraft striking the buildings have triggered the explosive, or could somebody have hit a switch?
And Schneider was found dead in his apartment in 1996, wasn't he?
No, 99.
Okay.
3 years later.
You sure? I've got January 17th, 1996.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at Sean David Morton's Delphi Associates newsletter. This is January 20th, 2002. Whether it was 96 or 99.
It's not the point. He was found
dead. That's not the point. Yeah. Right. But he was strangled with surgical tubing wrapped three times around his neck, and his death was ruled a suicide.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, another point. In American Free Press, there, and I don't have it here in front of me, but I subscribe to that. I don't know where the hell it is. I looked for it. But in American Free Press, they showed a beam that was cut at approximately a 45-degree angle with black residue around it from one of the towers. And that is exactly what thermite leaves. And thermite was used. And I'm not a chemist or anything like that, but the point is that if this guy Schneider did all of this, and this was set up, and that was the building definitely was imploded. It was a controlled type of detonation.
And I've got to tell you too, Richard. 80% of my respondents here, 80% of our listeners who are writing in, agree with you that there's something very strange here, and that we should have a new investigation. And I think that's what you're asking for. What are the chances of getting it?
Oh. Well, there's zero if most of the listeners do nothing. And that has been the biggest problem in America. Most people do nothing. We're trained. It's as if we're engineered by the media or something to not take action, to not be civically active. This is extremely important for us. It's a duty of every citizen to question our government. The government should fear its people. The people should not fear the government. When we see multi-ton steel sections ejected laterally at 600 feet out of the sides of the Twin Tower, instantly at 50 to 70 miles per hour, we should question our government. I mean, we have huge problems that are obvious, and we have to act on this information. This is what makes us citizens. We have to care about the first responders who are dying by the hundreds and hundreds of them very sick because they were told that the air is safe to breathe. And indeed, it was not. It's known that there's tons of asbestos. And I would encourage all of your listeners to support the Feel Good Foundation, which is one of the key organizations doing so much work on behalf of the ailing first responders. So that's www.feelgoodfoundation, F-E-A-L, goodfoundation.com. John Feel is doing incredible work with this organization.
Let's go to Los Angeles now. Michael on the wildcard line. Michael, good morning.
George, Richard.
Hi.
Hi. You know, when Germany invaded Russia, they used to send back films of the troops bathing in the water of the frozen tundra, laughing and boasting in arrogance, and then Goebbels would show those in Germany and assure the German people that everything is fine. Now, that was their government's version of events, and I believe that those who believe the U.S. government version of 9/11 are like the German people at that time, fixed to take a bath, just like the Germans on the Russian front or at Nuremberg. It is so transparent that 9/11 was set up to give the ruling class a leg up on the world situation that existed at that time without the constraints of representative government, without government obstructing them in their personal graft, giving them a platform to set up psychological warfare operations here in the United States on the people of this country through the Patriot Act, Police Act, warrantless wiretaps, intimidation, jingoism, you name it. They're following the Hitler playbook all over with the cults of personality, and Obama's just a pause in that plan. The next wave is coming, whether it be another accident, if you will. But I just, you know, people say, why are you saying this? You know, you could get yourself in hot water, and, you know, hell's got cold water, and I just don't want to go there. We got a lot of problems in this world. There is genuine threats. But the people that are running the show have no credibility, and they are not deserving of the trust of any of us. And I think that I thank you guys for being very courageous. Everybody in the country agrees with you guys, you know? They're just not getting the coverage.
That's so true.
Well, why aren't we getting the coverage? Let's talk about that. William Colby, the former director of the CIA, said, interestingly enough, the Central Intelligence Agency owns everyone of any significance in the major media. That is a chilling statement in and of itself.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm in the major media, and they don't own me.
Well, maybe maybe we're talking about the mainstream news anchors where we get most of our information outside of evening talk shows. After all, William Colby was murdered in a very suspicious boating accident shortly after making this incredibly revealing statement. Google Operation Mockingbird.
I know. Thursday, I've got a couple guests on. We're going to talk about the very strange deaths of microbiologists all around this planet. I mean, there is a picture here. Michael from Los Angeles is absolutely right. We've talked about it before. There's something going on. The question is if you're all correct about 9/11 and how it unfolded, why did they need to do that in order to get the kind of power they've always had?
Well, maybe they didn't have enough power. Maybe they needed to consolidate it. A real investigation into the technical evidence found at our website, ae911truth.org, will get us the answers to a lot of these questions. We'll find out who benefited.
I'm going to send everybody to your website, Richard, and shut it down because of a massive amount of millions of people hitting your server. That's what's going to happen.
Uh-oh. We'll also find out. Slip my mind. Go ahead, George.
All right. Next up, let's go to Dayton, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure.
Hey, question for both of you. First, I want to know if you even heard these reports, and if so, what would be your take on reports that on the night of September 10th, 2001, that all the lights in the World Trade Center were shut off?
That's true. That is true. And the security cameras. Everything went down. Richard, you've heard that.
I have heard reports of this. I don't have the documentation for it. I would like to have that. If you could get that to us, that would be very helpful.
You take email on that website?
Yeah, there's a contact us button, which is the way to contact us.
Let's go to San Diego, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, hi. It's the night for Tom calls.
It is.
My opinion and then an engineering question.
All right.
My opinion is there was a in Italy, there was a team of world leaders that was protected from another aircraft attack a couple years before 9/11. And then 5 weeks before 9/11, there is that document briefed to the president that bin Laden determined to strike in America. And there was this plan in Southeast Asia to use aircraft as weapons. So we all knew that was a possibility. Let me take a breath here.
Okay, sure.
Well, my engineering question is, how much fuel was on each of the planes? Was that enough to let the towers burn for an hour? Was there enough other combustible material inside of the one or two floors that were actually impacted to create the heat to melt that metal the way that they're claiming?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. The official story tells us that the fuel, most of it, 80 to 90% of it, was burned up outside the building. That's important. And the rest of the fuel burned up within 10 minutes. So no matter how much fuel there was, how many thousands of gallons, it burned up in 10 minutes. After that, we have normal office fires that were simply ignited by the jet fuel. And these office fires, in the case of the South Tower, pretty much burned out by the time, 56 minutes later, that the towers down. There's only enough fuel in a normal office to allow an area to burn for about 20 minutes. And then the fire moves on looking for fresh new fuel sources, leaving the area burned out behind, which is why when you have a building that collapses due to fire, you have large gradual deformations that follow the path of least resistance they fall over. But never in a steel frame high-rise building ever have we had fire bring one down, because the steel structure in these buildings is enormous. It's a massive 100,000-ton heat sink, directing heat away from the source of the energy, a source of the heat. So this is why we don't have buildings falling down, even though we have fires 10, 20 hours long in multiple floors.
You know, with the millions of dollars on bin Laden's head, why can't we get this guy? Why can't we find him? It doesn't make any sense either. I mean, we've got the technology to spot a frog on a sidewalk from space. It just doesn't make any sense. Next.
Well, I think we need him. I think we need him. That's why we haven't got him.
Let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Greg, you're up with us. First time caller. Hey, Greg.
Good morning. Listen, I shouldn't say this, but I'm part German, so you'll probably understand where I'm coming from. Let's say that he is right, that there was a controlled demolition of these three buildings. Now, you said you had a company in your town, George, where you lived, that had, you know, there's one of the world's largest demolitions.
Yeah.
I've watched programs about demolition, and I'm not an expert, but usually when they demolition anything that is in concrete, they break through the concrete so they can get to the rebar to make sure they get a break. When they do the steel, they cut the steel to make sure. And you said that the gentlemen that were working on the projects in the elevators got out of the buildings before they collapsed. So where are the witnesses that say, hey, last night we weren't working over there, but when we came in this morning, there was new cement. Or this area over here, there's a whole bunch of stuff here that wasn't here last night. There's no witnesses to say, we saw people or we saw something that didn't look right, that there was charges put there. You're talking small thermite charges. There'd have to be thousands of them to bring those buildings down.
Richard?
Well, let's talk about it. We have in the elevator cores, we have nobody watching what these elevator modernization workers were doing. We know they were in there. We know they were making a lot of noise. We know there's massive amounts of white dust that people were complaining about through the building. Presumably that's gypsum board that they had to hack through the elevator hoistway, which is designed to protect the building, to get to the core column. So that's a possibility. So that is the answer to your question. Apparently the explosives were limited to the core area because that's the area that they had the greatest access to. So they had to be strong enough not only to blow the core columns and beam structure, but the floors and also the perimeter buildings out. which had the net result of firing these 4-ton and perimeter, 4-ton and 20-ton perimeter wall units, 50 to 70 miles an hour, landing 600 feet away, destroying the winter garden. This is a physics impossibility without the additional factor of explosive force.
What if the thermite was loaded on the planes? Does that have anything to do with any of this?
Well, what we have is a series of explosions traveling in uniform symmetry straight down the building at two-thirds of free fall in terms of its speed or acceleration, and it uniformly, I mean symmetrically, straight down the building. So this couldn't have been caused by explosives placed in the airplane up above
right.
at the top. And what we have in the South Tower is the top 30 sections story of this building is leaning over at 22 degrees off center of the building below. So we have asymmetrical loading from this section above the airplane impacts. We have asymmetrical damage from the fires, asymmetrical damage from the airplane impacts. And yet down below, straight down, you see on our website these videos, complete symmetry all the way down to the ground. It is a non sequitur. It makes no sense.
Well, you're calling for a new investigation. You've got a number of architects and engineers that are part of the AE911truth.org organization. And all I want is the truth, Richard. I just want the truth. And I think that's not asking for a lot, is it?
No. We're asking everybody, if they want to know how they did it, why they did it, we're saying stay tuned. A real investigation will answer all of these questions. So if you really want to know, help us, for God's sake, to get a real investigation.
Richard's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. And, like I said, about 80% of you who have been emailing me would like to see a new investigation. We don't necessarily know what the heck happened, do we? But maybe a new investigation is warranted, and the time has come. But I'm not getting a chip. Our next program, we're going to be talking about 2012. Make sure you're part of that program. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lux Lonehood, Sean Landesur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.